And we're really happy tonight to have Ray Crow joining us. And Ray is a Bigfoot investigator. He's also the founder of the Western Bigfoot Society. And he's joining us from his home by telephone. Ray, thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
Now, you know, a lot of us have varied interests that that we go throughout our lives, and that some things that stay on the periphery, and some things that that we really grab a hold of. You really grabbed a hold of the Bigfoot, the Yeti, the idea of larger than life creature that's out there. Where did that all start?
Well, gee, what happened? I had a little used bookstore, and one of my customers came in and told me about this creature, and at the time, I was wanting to write a short story, so, hey, that sounded like a good topic. And I went out with him out into the field looking for Bigfoot and sort of chuckling all the time. But they told me what to look for, look for tracks and look for broken trees and hair on trees and things of that nature. And sure enough, I was out there by myself, there were a set of tracks going down the side of the road, great big ones. And at an elk trail that was crossing, I found broken trees that were up 8 foot tall. And, there was a giant hare 8.5 inches long hanging off of a tree. And as a matter of fact, it was so easy, I thought I was being had. and there was several other trips out into the field before I finally convinced myself that, hey, there really was such a thing.
Now, you currently live out just outside of Portland, Oregon. Is that the area that that you started your quest as well?
Well, more or less over in Washington was where I found the footprints. And then I started studying the area where the Clackamas River drainage is. That'll be near Estacada on your map. I found tracks there, and there again, more signs. I live right now in Hillsboro. It's a little bedroom community of Portland.
Now, Bigfoot, maybe you can describe Bigfoot as you see them, as far as their size, what they look like for the folks out here listening?
Well, sure, but you have them there in Minnesota, too. But there'll be larger sizes, around 8 foot, and usually brown or black, but sometimes there's a variations of both, or even a little bit of white. And they leave tracks probably 16, 18 inches long. It's a mature adult. And they usually are very secretive here. Pretty rarely you see them. Occasionally a driver will come around a curve or something, and there will be. And some of your rural areas, they have them actually living on their property if they're next to a woods or something. And they often come in and rap on the houses and scare the dogs and steal the chickens.
Wow. I haven't had that experience at my home, but I do, of course, we're in northern Minnesota here and live in probably the wildest part of Minnesota. And I know Bigfoot trackers have been here. Do you know of any in particular? Do you know any details about what might have been found in Minnesota?
Well, there's a little community called, you might be pretty close to it, Badger. And that's up in Rousseau County. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. It must be a small community.
You are familiar?
No, I'm not.
Oh, all right. There's a farm north of town. Bigfoot was seen just running all over the place. I don't have any other details other than that. That was in 1913 on April 9th, so it was fairly recent. So you got a lot of things going on in your area.
Was that 2013?
Yes, uh-huh.
2013.
I'm
okay.
Sorry, 2013.
Otherwise, you were
still living in the last century.
Well, there you are. You know, you described the Bigfoot. They're a pretty large animal, and it's amazing how few are ever seen, or at least of the photographs as I've seen. You know, the famous Patterson film, which was taken, I believe, 1967 by a fellow named Roger Patterson, seems to be the only one out there that you can really visualize what this creature looks like.
Well, there's an awful lot of them on the net now. But the problem is they're all recent, and you, as you know, people can hook you around with films pretty easily anymore. And a lot of them seem to be what we call blob squatches, because they just don't come in very clear. Blurred or just a black blob back in the bushes. And some of them are fairly good, though.
Now, how do you, now you're the founder of the Western Bigfoot Society. Is part of what you do kind of verifying that these sightings are authentic or real?
Well, yes and no. I 1991, I started a newsletter on these things and ran it to the last 10 years or so. And then I gave up because I was competing with the Internet. But, yes, we investigated all kinds of reports, and I had people that would go out. If I had a call in and somebody saw something, they'd go out and talk to the people to see, make sure they hadn't seen a bear or a stump or something like that, which happens often.
Now, one thing that's always bothered me a little bit about, I love the idea of the Yeti or the Bigfoot, and I think most everybody out there does, to know that there's another creature out there that we don't know that much about. But one thing that always hangs in the back of my mind is, why don't we ever find any skeletons of these critters, or do we?
Well, I have written a book, and I have a whole chapter on the bodies that abound, because they're getting hit by cars all the time, and hunters are knocking them down.
Really?
What happens is people just don't believe it. And they go off. As a matter of fact, several cases, people have shot one, and it looks so human that they buried it and covered it up and forgot about it. It seems like, I don't know whether it's true or not, but
well,
the government gets involved by sending their black helicopters, supposedly to carry the bodies off. I've heard several reports of that, but I don't know if it's true or not.
That's wild. I got to say, that's a little wild.
It's pretty fantastic.
It is. You mentioned earlier that when you first got started, you just kind of went out in the woods and you looked for broken branches high up in trees and hair and stuff like that. Is there a specific area or type of area that you'd go to look for?
Well, as a matter of fact, these things are found all over the United States. And not just the wild areas, but they come into the rural areas, too, often. They get reports of people having their dog food stolen and vegetables taken out of their garden or their trees, fruit trees are stripped. So they can be almost anywhere.
Yeah. Now, when I read that, there's a large article in Outside Magazine about many different individuals who have been totally involved in the search for Bigfoot, as you have. And it seems as though there's an awful lot of reports, but there aren't a lot of photographs, there aren't a lot of things that are verifiable. Some of these remains that we're seeing, are some of those DNA checked to see what this creature's DNA might look like?
Oh, yes. Excuse me. There's a Dr. Melva Ketchum, and she has accumulated over 120 samples of hair and skin and saliva and things like that from these things, and has written a report which she's published online, DeNova publication, I believe it's called, and it has three genomes, complete genomes of these things, and from what her analysis is, they're part human and part unnamed primate. They're hybrids. They've sort of kidnapped girls or Indian ladies and so forth way back down when and sent them home pregnant.
Wow.
Now, there's quite a few of those reports, as a matter of fact.
No kidding. You know, we had a local here, his name was Dick Stubbs, he's passed away a couple of years ago, but he had done some DNA work on a blood sample that was captured or found in an area of habitation in Ohio, and also some scrapings from a toenail that was found near these unusually large footprints in Arizona. And what he discovered was that they're quite closely related to humans, but they don't seem to have any direct relationship to the ape family.
Well, what's happening is there's two different types of DNA tests they take. There's the one type that just related only to the mother. It passed from mother to daughter and mother to son, but it has nothing but the mother's DNA. Consequently, that turns out to be completely 100% human. And as a matter of fact, DNA researchers in the past mostly just figure contamination if it's human. But now this new Dr. Melba, she has done the nuclear DNA. It's much more complex, and that's the one where she finds the primate DNA.
So kind of what you're saying is that these Yetis out there are kind of a cross between humans and some type of ape-like creature?
Yes, but I'll drop Yeti for the time being. There's been a TV special recently where they supposedly proved it was a bear.
Oh, I see.
And only there's three types of Yetis known, so we still have hope for the other two.
Okay. Well, one of the things that that kind of stuck in my brain as something that was hard to question was, and you may or may not be familiar with this, but Eric Shipton, who was a famous British mountain climber, one of the precursor climbers of the successful climb of Everest, as they were preparing for that climb in Everest, he took photographs of a big, what appeared to be a Bigfoot or Yeti print in the Himalayas with other climbers with him. Now, they're in a remote area where nobody is going to go and fake these things. So do you know anything about that particular episode?
Well, yes, I've seen several photographs of it. It's quite unique and weird looking, and I don't really know what to say to tell the truth about it. It's one of those where probably the other two type of Yetis. Not a bear.
So what would be the difference between these two or three types of Yetis?
Well, size, mostly. There's one of them that's quite huge. And then the medium-sized one, that's the bear. And then there's a small one. And those range pretty much all around Asia. Are best known, really, from Southeast Asia. Sumatra has one. They call it... recently they found a body of that had been sitting away in a scientific institution. They weren't interested in anything but tigers, so they ignored it. And I believe the DNA on that has been checked, but it's not been published yet.
Well, it seems like it's kind of a wide open study, you know, with a lot of varieties around the world. And has there ever been a report of a Yeti captured or found alive or shot and found whole?
Yes, there's during World War II, I believe the White Russian contingent, I'm not sure if that's true or not, they'd captured one and didn't really know what to make about it, but they had spent a lot of time writing about it, its size and so forth. They had it inside and it couldn't stand the heat. It suffered profusely. I don't know what they did with it after that. But yes, there's been several other cases very similar to that where they have caught them. As a matter of fact, there's a few of them here in the United States, if they're any true or not.
Now, what happens to these? Excuse me.
Say again?
What happens to these that are captured that we don't get to see them or have more exposure to?
Well, the thing is, nobody believes in them, so they don't exist. They captured one along the railway up in British Columbia, for instance, and it just sort of disappeared. Somebody thinks maybe Barnum and Bailey might have got it and been their wild man. But recently, you know, we've had at least one killing of one of things in the Sierras, and that's one of the ones that the DNA went in on and proved to be part primate, part human. And there's another recent one, we're not sure if it's a hoax or not. A fellow was shot one in Texas, and that's been on the net. I've been following it closely. Where, you know, there's a lot of big money involved
Is there really?
So you don't really know what to believe until actually somebody publishes.
Now,
right now, the fellow's been going around showing a creature, his supposed creature, off, and a lot of people don't believe it, and a lot of people do.
So they make money.
So the bodies are out there.
Mm. Okay. When you say there's a lot of money in it, as I see a lot of the different groups, there's, it seems as though, that are tracking Yetis like you are, that there's a lot of infighting and kind of backbiting among the groups that are trying to find these creatures.
Everybody wants to be the first.
Okay.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of people that cooperate. I'm one of the cooperator ones, and a lot of them, you know, they just won't tell you anything at all about what they're doing or how they're doing it or where. And if somebody else does something similar, they get stabbed in the back, so to speak.
Hmm.
A lot of infighting. But I guess that's true in all the sciences, really. That people who didn't believe the Ice Ages, for instance, and you
or the world
know
is
pretty
flat,
well
huh?
yourself that ice was probably on top of your town at one time. It took a long time before they quit calling them fools. And there's what they call the continental drift. That was supposed by a weatherman up in Greenland, I believe it was. And of course, he was laughed out of it, too. Hmm. Many other instances. Scientists that get in and stab each other, I imagine. I guess even Einstein, he had some early 100 other scientists wrote some kind of paper saying he's wrong, completely wrong. So, yeah, that happens.
Now, are you still actively out there looking for Bigfoot?
No, I don't go into the field anymore.
Okay.
I'm pretty much retired, but I do. I run meetings of the Western Bigfoot Society. We just had one last Saturday. A fellow came in and talked to us for an hour about curious structures these things make out in the woods. They almost look like teepees. Some of them are covered, and some are just sticks that are leaned together in a queer shape. And so far, we don't really know what the meanings of these is. Everybody's got a different idea, everything from a young Bigfoot at play to there being an actual statement of a language of some kind that they have. Some people think they're probably some religious type of thing for the Bigfoot. We don't know what if they're human, you know, if they're religious or not. It's fun to think so.
Well, there's a lot of unknown out there, it sure sounds like. But, Ray, we want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight to tell us a little bit about your part of that world. And I hope that one day you'll drive in your car and one will pop right out in front of you so you can say, I was the first one.
Yeah. Can I plug my book?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, called Bigfoot Behavior. It's available on Amazon. And for people that are interested in the geology and paleontology of Washington, I've written what I kind of think is a pretty neat novel. And this is Ray Crow on Amazon. We're in the process of now doing a cookbook called How to Cook a Bigfoot. Yeah, and it's a tongue-in-cheek thing. It has a...
You need a really big pot.
Gets the Bigfoot and keep falling in their own traps and things like that.
Okay. It's a wild world out there. Ray, once again, the name of your book?
Oh, Bigfoot Behavior is called.
Bigfoot Behavior.
And the other one is called Shaman from the East.
So you have two.
The one,
Great. Well, once again, thank you so much, Ray, for giving us your time. And as I said, good luck in your continued search and also with the books that are out there. And maybe someday we'll see your name in the paper right next to one of those Yetis.
Okay, I hope so.
Okay.
And yeah, it's been a pleasure being with you.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye now.
Mm-hmm.